I just was informed that I'm being recorded, which I'm glad this is an illegal situation. And I also am very appreciative that the United States has a statute of limitations on stuff, so I can't get in too much trouble. I said, I'm Ron. I am an alcoholic. And I do like the phrase, it's in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, our stories disclose in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. When I came in, the first problem I had was, what's it? You know, what it was like, what happened, what it is like now. And I just come to understand for myself that it is life, what life was like, what happened, what life's like now. And that's why when, sometimes, somebody gets it, somebody doesn't get it, I just kind of always refer to it as life. Somebody doesn't get life, or they get it, or whatever. In a general way, I'll just share that when I was 17 years old, as stupid as somebody can be, I just made really bad decisions. By the time I got to high school, I was a party animal. I liked to party with everybody. And bad decisions, including selling a pound of pot to two cops on a beach in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, thinking it was a good idea. I didn't want to go to court, so thinking it was a good idea to take off and go to a commune called Earth People's Park. and went. The commune was really full of fugitives. It wasn't full of hippies. There were just people living in the woods. It was up on a border of Canada, and it got pretty cold at night. Well, my decision making did not improve. As I started to get older, some of the stuff I used to use and entertain myself, whatever, some of that, a lot of that stuff went away, but alcohol stuck around. And I just became what I thought very good at drinking. I learned to drink and not get in a lot of trouble. And I learned myself what I thought was flying under the radar, play the game, be employed, income. Met a nice young lady, got married, couple of kids, and all the while thinking I'm doing great at that time. But I was going through a lot of things that I didn't understand until sobriety. Like what a resentment is, if somebody just told me it was your shit list, and I said, oh yeah, I got one of those, and it would probably be like a phone book, if I wanted to get a resentment list, I'll just get the phone book, and that pretty much would take care of it. But a resentment, like example of a small one. When I was single in my 20s, my car broke down. It was raining out, and didn't have phones attached to our hips back then. So I made my way through the rain and mud and everything to a fast food place called Wendy's. And I went inside and I asked them if I could use the phone. My car had broken down. And they said no. They said, about a half mile up the street, there's a payphone. So I didn't eat or visit a Wendy's for probably over 20 years. In the meantime, I got married, had kids, and my kids would be young, 4, 5, 6 years old. Can we go to Wendy's? And I go, no, I'm not going to Wendy's. I'll go to McDonald's, I'll take you to Subway, I'll go here or there, but not Wendy's. And it's ridiculous. I come to understand that's a resentment. And I had a lot of them. That's just a minor one. That's just how much a small thing, would stay. with me. Never mind the big stuff like relationship with parents, jobs, co-workers, bosses, all that, that the bigger stuff, world events, whatever. Never mind those resentments. I couldn't handle a little tiny itty bitty one, about getting angry. So I continued to have jobs, and in some amount of sanity, a couple of years after high school, I managed to get some college in, and I ended up somewhat educated, everything, and with that, my careers or jobs would go from professional to basically, I was a truck delivery driver, and I kind of liked it because people left me alone. Didn't have to talk to many people. Didn't have to do much of anything except pick things up and put them down and drive in between those places. And I thought I was the best freaking delivery driver in the Northeast here. My route was Boston, and traffic around Boston is kind of hideous because the roads are based on old cow paths. There's no logic to them or anything like that, but I got to know the area very well. And I viewed it as a right that when I wanted to have a beer drink, that I would have one. And I used to be able to put off, after I'd pull the truck into the warehouse, be able to get in the car, stop at the liquor store, and then have some drinks when I got home. Then it was not, didn't quite wait till I got home. And I couldn't get out of the parking lot at the liquor store. Till eventually, I was stopping at liquor stores with the truck, with the name on the truck and a 1-800 number and all that, and getting what I needed with the at first saying, well, I don't have to make the stop once I park the truck and be home. Then it was opening it up, and then sooner or later it was like, the times would move up from I could wait till after work till on the way home from work, driving the truck. And then before I knew it, it'd be like noontime. And my wife would pack me a nice lunch and I'd have it in a cooler. Now, and I'd pass a poor guy on the street corner with a sign, and he's homeless and hungry. And I would give my food. I'd give my sandwich and stuff to this guy, thinking I'm a great, great person, humanitarian. I'd have room in my cooler. I'd fill it up, and I'd start drinking while driving a truck full of hazardous stuff around Boston. And one day, I didn't even remember having this thought. I had a thought. When I was in sobriety, probably having to do with steps, looking at some steps, whatever. And that thought was I was driving a truck one day and was on a ring road, a highway around Boston, and it started to get a snow squall or whiteout conditions like within a minute, and the roads got bad fast. And I already had a couple of drinks in me. And I had a thought, and this is the thought I remembered having. What if somebody hit me, slid their car, hit my truck? I'm in big trouble. And all that being true, but then I realized my thought was, what if somebody hit me? I'm the one under the influence. My thought wasn't, geez, what if I lose control of this truck, kill somebody, kill a family? Wipe out a portion of the environment, whatever it might have been. I did not think of others. It was, what if somebody hit me? And it kind of hit me like a 2x4 over the head. What a selfish bastard I've been for a long, long time. Very selfish thought. And so, with sobriety started to come some clarity. And with that clarity came a lot of pain. I started to really have problems at work, and none of it, I believe, was related to alcohol. It was that my boss was an a-hole. The people I work with were a-holes. Everybody and everything. I started not dealing with things. So I started having what I believed to be nervous breakdowns. And I went to a psychiatric hospital. I'd come out of the hospital thinking, all right, I'm within a day or two out of the hospital. I'm taking these new psych meds that they've given me, popping them in my mouth, and I'm swallowing them down with a Budweiser, because that's what I did. And that, but, and even with that, things would be okay for a while. I wouldn't say they got better, but they somehow I was able to tolerate it. And then the thing would start again, and I'd end up back in the psych house, probably about the last 7 years of my drinking. And the third time in there, and my memories are, I can remember some stuff about being in a hospital, but I can't a lot of times remember which time it was that I was in the hospital. The last time after being how I got there was I collapsed in my front hall, and my wife called an ambulance, and they took me to a regular hospital, which I was there for a few days, but I couldn't I didn't talk, and I don't. To this day, I don't know if it's I couldn't talk or it just wouldn't talk, and I'm not sure. And they finally sent the shrink in, packed me up, and shipped me out of there because they took all kinds of Polaroids of my brain and stuff. And so, well, we don't see anything wrong physically, and they sent me off to the psych hospital again once they figured out that I had been there before. It wasn't a rocket science to figure out that that's probably where I should be. Came out of psych hospital and graduated to what they call a day hospital, where you go in the morning, you're there during the day, and then you go home at night. And just within a couple of days, I was stopping at the liquor store on the way home from the psych hospital, where they're teaching me stuff about cognitive behavioral therapy, how I act, think, behave, that kind of stuff, and ways that they find can help. And I'm thinking, really thinking, and I'm starting to understand this stuff. Starting to understand what they're talking about. I stop at the liquor store. Pick up a quart of ice beer, which is more alcohol in it, and I pick up a six pack of non-alcoholic beer, and I make sure there's one alcoholic beer missing by the time I get home. So if my wife smelled beer on my breath, I can say, "Oh yeah, I have one of these." So I'm believing I'm understanding the stuff that they're talking about, and I'm stopping at a liquor store. I'm drinking while I'm driving home. I litter because that's the only way I knew how to get rid of the damn bottle. And then I lie to my wife once I got home. So what I think I'm understanding nothing, like zero. And that last time, it was around this time of year, and there was a counselor at the psych hospital, and after we talked for a while or whatever. I didn't talk a lot about alcohol, because the last thing I wanted to talk about, in case somebody suggested I not do that, I did. I was deathly afraid of that happening. But he suggested I try an AA meeting, and I really didn't know what AA was. I thought it was just a bad joke in the bar, you know, AA's for quitters. But I said, all right, I am really, really tired of being sick. I do not like this mental illness, you know, this depression, anxiety, this diagnosis, that, all kinds of stuff. I went to an AA meeting, and it happened to be in the very same building that I went to grammar school with the nuns, Sister Mary Cracky Knuckles and the rest of the crew. And I, just by pulling into the parking lot and seeing that building, just gave me a lot, you know, contempt. And I walked into the AA meeting, and it was full of nice people. They were smiling and welcoming, and I wasn't used to that. And then they had the banners all over the walls with various things on them. And I sat down. I couldn't really listen to anything. It just sounded like the next speaker was trying to be funnier than the speaker before him, because people were laughing and they were kind of like doing whatever they do in an AA meeting. But it was very foreign for me. And at the end of the meeting, they got up, they held hands in a circle, big circle, and they said the Lord's Prayer. I said, aha, that's who these people are. They're religious nutcases, is my immediate conclusion. And I left there. I went to the liquor store. But a few days later, I went to another meeting, and I believe now, for quite a while I was kind of confused about this, but I believe now that I was desperate enough to get well. I was willing to try anything. And in that second meeting is when I figured out, oh, these people are talking about not drinking at all. They're not talking about just getting their lives together and getting on with their life. They're talking about, you know, abstinence. And looking at yourself, and those two things are very scary for me. But about a month after I started going to AA meetings, a day came. I didn't have any alcohol. There had been a few days, because Christmas was in that time, and I view myself as I was the Grinch that stole Christmas, because I was home, I wasn't working, and my wife, who picked up having her relatives over for Christmas, Christmas Eve, when her mom passed, she took that over, canceled it, because she had, you know, I'd been, not just because of, you know, me, she'd been through a lot, too, with all of this, and should cancel Christmas. So I was feeling like the Grinch that stole Christmas, had Christmas canceled, which was the Grinch's wish, right? And about, you know, coming up in about a week is in the States we call it anniversary, other parts call it birthday, whatever, but I'm coming up on one about 5 days or so. And it's a, so that's, you know, kind of what it was like, you know, what happened. But what happened as far as becoming sober, it was just starting. In my first year, I was still the same guy, I just wasn't drinking. Still like to blame everybody, still like to point fingers, all that kind of thing. About 8 months into sobriety, I moved out of the house. And at that time, we were married about 25 years. My kids had were in their early 20s. I moved out of the house because I thought, I just can't take this crap. I just can't take it anymore, right? I wasn't drinking. Now I so barely afford the house. Now I have an apartment also. Then 2 months after that, I'm feeling the same way about work. I can't take it anymore. I just can't take doing the same work. Can't take it one more day. And I quit my job. So now I have two households, no job, 10 months sober, right? Out of my mind, completely out of my mind. I'm ready to go bang on that mental hospital. Let me in. Okay. Wasn't sure where else to go. But through it all, I kept going to meetings, and I kind of more think of it as the steps kind of did me. In the beginning, I didn't do the steps. They kind of did me. And I, even, you know, in AA, I thought I was screwed because this higher power, this God thing just wasn't, it wasn't happening for me. Even though these people kept saying, oh, don't worry about it, just keep going. It all happened. It would be okay. And it wasn't happening. And I started going through, all, you know, listening to different people. I started going through all kinds of different things of formulating what higher power could be for me. And it was kind of trial and error kind of thing, mostly error. But early on in sobriety, I was in a Savers thrift store looking for a raincoat, something, because I was doing a lot of walking at that time, couldn't afford driving, and I found the raincoat, and I went over, I was looking through the book section, and I found this little book, kind of meditation cards and a book. It was called The Wisdom of Tao, and I brought that home, and I started reading the meditation cards and the pamphlet that came with it, and some of the stuff in it for me was making some sense, and it was, you know, it wasn't a religion, it wasn't anything like that. It was just some things that I could understand. And so sometimes I joke about it with my sponsor. I found my higher power in Savers thrift store. I get a kick out of that. But it really helped. It helped me. It opened up kind of a door that there was more of knowledge. There was more of things that I could identify with in the world. So that was all about 12 years ago, and I've been not drinking, but learning how to not drink, and then learning how to live. When I came in to AA, I was 52 years old, but I was a 52-year-old adolescent. I had an adolescent brain. In other words, I was stupid. That's the way I look at it. I just putting two and two together was difficult. Logic, which always seemed to come little bit easy to me, what wasn't coming easy, nothing was coming easy, and there was life, you know. That's the last part of it, you know, what it's like now. My sobriety over time is constantly evolving, so I try not to get stuck in any one set of ideas or set of anything. I've been available for my kids as they became adults, more available. I was kind of missing in action during their teenage years. And so I got to learn and experience what amends, you know, making amends was about. And it, you know, in sobriety, my mom got sick. She developed Alzheimer's, which is a progressive disease. A lot of people know. So it went from, you know, having to be at her apartment a lot to having to stay over at night, to we fixed up. In the meantime, when I said I moved out of the house, 10 months after that, so I moved back in to the house because, you know, I had the psychiatrist and marriage counselor, a sponsor, all this. It took like all the king's horses and all the king's men to get, trying to put Ron back together again, back up together again. And we have a, pretty soon we have our 35th anniversary coming up. And which is remarkable. Then when my mom got sick, our family, not my decision, it became a family decision. It had to do with family. It wasn't me dictating what was going to occur and happen. And we made a decision together that mom will, you know, move in. And I left my job that I had at that time to take care of my mom. And so what AA afforded me was not that life was going to be wonderful. What it afforded me was that I became available to participate in my own life. And I became available for those people in my life, not just a speed bump. I think that was my kids' nickname for me when they were young, was speed bump, because they had to step over me all the time. So, and before then, you know, my mom was here a while, and then it became very, very difficult, and she did end up having to go to a nursing home, nursing facility. And in the meantime, I have one sibling, an older brother, and he became ill. And I still, in sobriety, having resentments to my brother, I didn't feel like my brother did enough to help with mom. He, you know, unless asked, he didn't, you know, brought up, and I hate asking for help. I don't know if anybody else has that problem, but I hate it. And to have, you know, my brother like come and sit with mom for a while Cheryl and I could go out for, just go out for a little bit, get away. So I didn't like how about my brother. But my brother got sick and died like in a month from diagnosis to death, and he died. And then all this crap that I thought about my brother didn't matter. It was like, what a waste of freaking time, you know, start to not like what somebody's doing. And so in sobriety, here I am, you know, learning about this stuff. This is kind of what I mean. The steps kind of did me in a lot of ways. And then the funeral director passed the papers to me. He said, "You're the next of kin. You make the decisions on this stuff." I said, "Me? You gotta be? No, that's gotta be a mistake. This gotta be. No, it was me. make those decisions." But they ended up being everything ended up being okay, and my mom passed. And everything was okay. Things happened, you know, things happened health-wise for me. Everything's, you know, okay. I have health stuff that are consequences, probably from my drinking. But it's really, it's okay, you know, it's okay. doesn't stop me from being content. It doesn't stop me from being happy. I'm not getting in my own way as much. I thought for a while, stop that crazy thinking. I just wanted to stop thinking. And it wasn't so much my thinking as it was my being. Given those times where I ended up in that hospital, one time I was on my way to jump off a bridge. I had enough. But I found myself in the wrong lane. The bridge was to the left, and I wasn't in the left-hand lane to turn left. God forbid I make an illegal turn while going to kill myself. Couldn't have that. I ended up in front of a fire station blowing on a horn until they came out. And so what kind of condition I was, and they took me to the hospital. So I don't have to go through that anymore. I don't have to drink. The choice to drink was, I didn't have a choice. Today I have a choice. Today I have choices about how I live my life and what I do. I still get my own way. I still say stuff that just shouldn't stay. I can still be insensitive. I still have all this stuff I can work on. Isn't that wonderful? But I don't look at it so much as work anymore as experiencing and just trying to learn from the experiences. And I try. And that's another word. It's in AA a lot, try. We try to carry a message. And I think that's the most I've talked about in a share. And I'll tell you, Zoom came along, and then I found that, the United States just does, the AA had a list of meetings you go to on Zoom when the pandemic hit. I said, well, I bet other countries have that too. And I found one in Great Britain. In the UK, and I ended up with a home group that's in England. I'm in a little tiny state, Rhode Island, in the United States. The smallest state in the union, and we're very kind of small-minded about it, area, and I have this home group that meets twice a day. For me, it's in the morning and afternoon. And for almost 3 years now, I've been going and been an active member in that meeting. And it's just because the pandemic hit didn't mean I still couldn't participate in AA, still couldn't be of service to something, somebody, somewhere, somehow. Certainly, honored, that I was asked to come here and speak today. It's a privilege, it really is. And I want to thank you all, being here. And that's what I got. I appreciate it. Thanks, Megan.